Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. So again, the news from Canucks practice today, Quinn Hughes was there, started practice with the team, leaves the ice early per Brendan Batchelor, and we'll see. We'll keep an eye peeled here for when Rick Tocchet speaks, if we get any sort of update, further update on the latest injury or issue affecting Quinn Hughes and potentially affecting his availability. But, you know, as we were talking in the last segment about, you know, how much should you wait tomorrow's game against the Ducks as the final, you know, the final game before the deadline, how much should it play into how management views this team, how we view this team, what we expect them to do at the deadline. We were making this point yesterday as well, but I mean, the potential availability and effectiveness of Quinn Hughes is a massive story here.
And should, in fact, be the largest factor that determines what this club does, I think.
Yes.
Just in that, you know, if you're going to be without Quinn Hughes, or there's a risk that you're without Quinn Hughes for 3 weeks, that's your season. You know, and I mean, this team won some games without Hughes prior to the Four Nations face-off, but that was with Thatcher Demko, like, turning back the clock. You know, those were goalie wins, frankly. And, you know, I don't know, given that Demko also is working through. I mean, was Demko at practice today?
No.
So I don't know that we're looking at that as a situation where, we're necessarily counting on Demko to be at that level either. So you've got Lankinen, who seems to be run. And this gets us into the spent force theory, right? We've seen this some seasons in the annals of Canucks history. Like the John Tortorella season is an example that stands out to me, where things kind of aren't going the way the club wants early in the year. So you end up riding your best players to a preposterous degree. And as a result, by the time you get to this sort of stretch run, whether it's injury, usually it's a combination of injury and fatigue, the player's not at their best. And you know, I sort of mentioned this actually in my takeaways after the Kings game, which was that, like, you know, it coming down to the wire and Hughes talking, really convincing Tocchet to put him in after the medical staff cleared him pretty late after he didn't take line rushes. You know, I'm reluctant to get too much into this because I think people can pile on NHL team medical staffs, which do mess things up, by the way. Like, it's not always unfair, but I do think there's a pylon that can emerge when, like, hockey injuries in the human body are wildly unpredictable and circumstances can get complicated. In Quinn Hughes's case, there was clearly a secondary injury, something of a comp injury, that cropped up in addition to what reportedly is the oblique. And I think that explains Tocchet's commentary from Sunday, where, you know, it's not the oblique. He's tweaked something else. The fact is, though, is that I do think a team more comfortably ensconced in a playoff spot and sort of with a higher level of ambition probably isn't rushing to get Hughes into the lineup the way the Canucks did on Wednesday. Like, I think that's fair to say. And that's, by the way, partly on the player, partly on the team.
Well, I was going
to
say, because the way it was explained to us, at least, is that he wasn't going to play, but he made the case himself.
Correct.
Which, so, kudos to him,
yeah,
team has to have...
He's an absolute badass.
Has to be able to put their foot down and say no.
Well, but also they know the stakes too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's one thing to put your foot down because you're comfortably in a playoff spot and your eyes are trained on winning a championship, and it's another when you know you're in a absolute anchorman newsroom fight for your playoff lives, right? Like, that's just different. So, anyway, I think the combination of not knowing what we're going to get from Pettersson, right? And I think at this point having very low expectations, unfortunately. Not knowing what this club can rely on getting from Quinn Hughes, even when he's in the lineup.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have a pretty good idea of what they're going to get from Pettersson over the remainder of the season, unfortunately.
I agree. But also, like, okay. I would be pretty surprised if Pettersson looks the way he did on this road trip over the balance of the season.
Sure.
I wouldn't be shocked if he looks the way that he has for much of the season.
Yeah.
But like the defensive game falling out the bottom there, that to me was a surprise on this road trip.
Yeah, that's fair.
I've never seen him be so feckless defensively. That to me is legitimately uncharacteristic, even when I'm watching him play and he has no juice.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
So you're right. Maybe it won't be quite that bad, but
it better not be.
That
was a level of bad outside of what we've seen from him across a disappointing 12-month stretch.
It was.
Like, at least he's been drawing penalties for the most part, or like in position. He hasn't been killing them. He was like an assassin, knifing his own side between the ribs throughout that five-game set.
Yeah.
That is unusual.
Yes.
That is not who this guy is, even if he's reduced in terms of, you know, the offensive or attacking juice that he had earlier in his career and has had for most of his career, to caption it fairly.
Yeah, anyway, sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, it's fine. And then I don't know that you know what you're getting from Demko or Lankinen, given that Lankinen's about to hit his career high in games played, that there have been some signs of overexertion, that we have no idea what Demko's health looks like or outlook looks like. I mean, the truth is that the club was making very optimistic noises that Demko would return on the other side of that five-game trip, which he didn't go on. The fact that he wasn't at practice Sunday or today now looms as a pretty major data point for us that, hey, like, who knows? Who knows what? And again, who knows if he'll be, like, right back in rhythm the way he was in the lead-up to the Four Nations break when he gets back. You miss another 3-4 weeks of action?
Yep.
I mean, and sorry, we're already at a month. Like, that's tough, man. It's really tough to just stop and start as an NHL goaltender.
As often as he has done.
And then we don't even know what the Canucks get from Shelovs in the event that he's pressed in to start 5 more games this season. But I know that I won't have a lot of confidence. I would not recommend betting Canucks money line in any of those games, would you?
No.
No.
And if we're talking...
You said that like such a disappointed buddy's mom. Like, can we have another bear claw?
No. Absolutely not.
Definitely not.
And if we're talking about, you know, you said like the idea of the spent force, right? Which is basically all these injuries and everything and usage, certainly in the case of Quinn Hughes, catching up to the Canucks and reducing their effectiveness over the remainder of the season. And I do think you have to factor in the mental side of this. And I know there's always pushback, right? Because it's, hey, these are extremely highly paid guys. And yes, there should be that, you know, you want everyone to have that incredibly high level of professionalism where they're able to push through no matter what. But I can only imagine how draining this season has been for the guys in that room, how exhausting this season has been for the guys in that room, right? And I think, you know, you look at a player like Brock Besser. Now, on the one hand, you could say, well, look, if they keep him, that uncertainty goes away after Friday and he knows he's staying here. But even if he stays without an extension in place, that's still a lot of uncertainty going into the summer, right? So I don't think that's necessarily a distraction that's going away just because the trade deadline passes. There's just all of these things going on that make you wonder, is this team going to be able to kind of mount that last rally to right, defend their playoff spot or make it in to the playoffs? And I do think you're right to point out the physical stuff, the injury stuff, the availability stuff. But at a certain point, I think the mental stuff plays a huge role in this as well. And you point to the Tortorella season. I mean, that turned into a circus too, right? You think about,
they were completely out of gas down the stretch.
The Luongo stuff, the Luongo trade,
the fight.
The fight, yeah. I was going to say, the circus against Calgary, right? Like, that was part of the story there, too. It was, oh, man, we're driving these guys into the ground because we're desperate for points. But then also the off-ice stuff got turned into just ridiculousness. And I think there is a parallel here, too, where there's a lot of injury stuff catching up to them. It also must have just been such a drag to be in that room this season so far.
Oh, yeah, no question. No question. You can see it. The sneering joylessness of it all has been how I've captioned it since like before we even really had a full sense of the scope of it.
Yes.
Because the vibe was just so miserable. So, yeah, I mean, and this is the thing, right? Because I don't think this Canucks team is like any worse than ninth in the West.
Mm-hmm.
I think Utah's better than them because of the way that Utah can actually attack off the rush and manufacture chances and control play 5-on-5. That to me is just at a different gear than the Canucks are at. And by the way, I think we've seen it in the two games that these teams have played head-to-head. But I think they're no worse than the ninth best team in the West, even in the wake of the JT Miller trade. You know, even with all the injuries that have waylaid this season, right? And, you know, there's this temptation, because we're used to and conditioned to, when talking about hockey, the old, you're never as good as you look at your best, never as bad as you look at your worst sort of framing, to be like, okay, well, the Canucks weren't as good as they looked last season, and now they're better than they've looked this season. And it's this two sides of the same coin, and it's really not. Like, it's not bounces this year that have killed the Canucks. It's injuries.
Yeah.
And it's an inability to, I think, click into a new identity, the same mentality that they had last season.
And like, the total collapse of their highest paid player. Huge part of the story. But their other stuff matters as well.
Well, but I think the total collapse of the highest paid player fits into the mentality side, no?
Yeah,
because
it does.
There was something off about how this core interacted that necessitated a trade that weakened the team. And I think I think it's all the same issue. The dysfunction that prevented this club from being on the same page the way they were a season ago. For me, that's like what's defined this season. And so more than anything, I think these are different things. But I don't think the Canucks are like a cellar-dwelling team on true form. I know it's hard to wrap our heads around things like, hey, that five games was actually outside the scope of even the poor level that Pettersson has been at over the past 12 months, right? We should expect more than that. That is not what we're likely to see over the balance of the season. The way the Canucks played on this road trip is probably not who they are. Right, they're probably not going to get 878 goaltending the rest of the way. They probably eventually are going to have a run of 10 games where they shoot 8 or 9%, as opposed to the 5.5% that they've shot since the Miller trade. Are they good offensively? No, but they're not this hopeless either. I do think we're sort of coming through this streak where, just as the Canucks were wildly fortunate in October and November and December and January and February and March and April too and into May last season, what we just saw from the Canucks on the other side of the Four Nations break, it isn't really, I think, their level.
That's fair, but the question is not so
much...
Their
level's not high enough, don't get me wrong.
That's exactly what I was just going to say, right? It's not so much that are they a true talent team that goes 1-4 in every five-game segment. It's... what's their ultimate ceiling? What's their actual ceiling?
But they're priced at -135 to make the playoffs. And I think that's right. Like, I think they should be more or less priced higher than Calgary and St. Louis to make the postseason, right? They're +105 to miss the playoffs. I'd rather have that side of it than the, because I think they should be priced at a pure pick'em with the Utah Hockey Club, right? Who you can still get for +375, by the way. Thank me later. So, you know, for the way I sort of look at it is, I think the market's right that the Canucks are better than this. It's just that I think bettors, people who are actually watching this team, and this is why the steam's coming in, see this spent force dynamic playing out.
Sure.
And assume that it continues. But it won't necessarily. You know what I mean? Like, this team won't be this pop gun offensively, I don't think, over the balance of the season.
Yeah, I get that. It's just, again, I don't know... Like, I haven't written them off making the playoffs, but again, it's like, okay.
You've written them off winning two games against Winnipeg.
You make the playoffs. Great. No, yeah. I was thinking about that today. I was confused by the whole thing because you were like, what the upside?
If I'm presenting their upside case, are you betting
but it's
the
like,
over
what is,
or the under?
I don't know how the, like, I don't
Do
know
you
what
think
the
this team's upside exceeds this. Is this the ceiling outcome? Like, I'm confident of this. I'm confident of this.
I don't know how the idea of the ceiling and the over-under interact. That's what's throwing me off.
You're betting the over-under on their ceiling.
But I don't get what that means. I don't understand all the exercise.
I'm asking you to weight where their ceiling exists. I'm asking you to measure it. Is it 18 feet? Is it 20?
All right. I don't know. Anyways. I was thinking about today. I was like, I'm still confused by that whole
fair,
thing.
Fair enough. Excuse me.
No, that's all right.
I'm just saying, I know myself well enough to know that if the Canucks make the playoffs, it means 5 days in Winnipeg, which, like, yay! And then it means the following. There will be this moment where I'm, like, on the verge of the season ending, This has been a tough season to cover, right? And Kevin Lankinen will steal a game to make me rebook a flight back to Winnipeg.
Absolutely.
There's no world where I'm not lucky enough to avoid that fate.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, like, I don't think anyone's just, well, there are some people who after that road trip were like, oh, this team has no chance of making the playoffs. That's obviously not true.
I think that's the popular take.
Sure.
Locally, no,
that is the reactionary, emotional, in the moment, you know, only judging the last five games and how bad they looked. That is that take. And I get that. That's out there. That take always exists, positive or negative. I don't think that's fair. My point, and again, why coming back to like why I wouldn't wait whatever happens against the Ducks that much tomorrow, and why I think they should be pretty clear sellers at the trade deadline is, yeah, their ceiling is higher than what they showed on that road trip, but it's still nowhere close to high enough. That's the ultimate issue for this team. It's not whether or not they can make the playoffs. It's that that's a low stakes thing to be betting on. And I get the revenue argument. Now this text comes in. What's with the emphasis on making playoffs? Is hurting our long-term future worth it for five games of extra revenue? I do think
five games. You'd have to win around.
Yeah, you'd have to win around to get to five.
People
games.
Are like, what do you mean three games of extra? It could be two.
Yeah, it definitely could be. Anyways.
They could lose in three.
Minimum two games
of
revenue. I do think it's fair to say that there are like just pure hockey reasons why the team wants to make the playoffs. It matters to the players, and that's important. You don't want to end the season feeling like you've completely failed, even if it would be extremely disappointing. Still, I get it. You want to at least have something you can hang your hat on as the players from the end of the season. Fine. I've never understood, because we say like, well, they really want to make the playoffs for that revenue. And people, there's kind of this reaction is like, hey, it's a business. I get it. You know, you got to factor the business side of things in. But it's like, even purely from a financial business perspective, like sometimes businesses, you know what they have to do? They have to invest in the long term.
Right.
They have to take out a loan so they can invest in some new equipment. And maybe it's a little bit painful in the here and now because you've got some debt you have to service. But then that new equipment helps you make even bigger profits down the road. You can tell by how intricate of an example this is that I'm a big entrepreneur. But like, I've never understood, even if we accept at face value that, okay, hey, it's a business, and it is. It's a business. The ownership can run it however they want. They want to make money on it. They must have printed money between like 2009 and 2012. You know what I mean? Like, if you were trying to just purely get the most money, the most revenue you could out of your NHL team, and specifically a team in this market, the Vancouver Canucks, I think the best way to go about doing that would be build a team that's going, you know, primed to go on a deep run several times over the course of 5 to 7 years. Like, those are the teams where you're really going to make your money. So I get got revenue, that playoff revenue, that's really important. Is there no sense of, hey, maybe we're willing to lower our chances of getting that playoff revenue this year, but drastically increase our chances of not just getting two games of playoff revenue, but maybe getting like 10 games of playoff revenue, maybe getting 20 over the course of a couple seasons games of playoff revenue. That is what has always mystified me about the financial argument for making the playoffs. Like, yeah, obviously there's a payoff. There's a payoff in the here and now, but the here and now is not the only thing that matters. You can all think of how big the payoff could potentially be if you just lay the groundwork for a perennially competitive team that can go on multiple deep playoff runs.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the cost of getting there is steep. I'm not going to minimize that. But if you had the Columbus Blue Jackets team, that Columbus Blue Jackets team playing up-tempo, fun hockey with a bunch of, you know, giant-bodied, high-skilled young forwards just like absolutely destroying opponents off the rush, if you had that team in Vancouver, man, they'd be rock stars.
Yeah.
Like, then you're getting back into season ticket wait lists. You know what I mean? People would feel like they're on the ground floor. Now, it takes some pain to set it up. It takes years to set it up, and it takes some luck. You need, you know, Pat Verbeek to draft Leo Carlson. You need to be sage enough to, quote-unquote, reach for Kent Johnson when they did so.
Mm-hmm.
You need to nail a Marchenko pick in the second round. I mean, it ain't easy. But if you have the volume and you have smart staffers working for you, you know, smart, sharp development guys like Rick Nash, you've got an excellent amateur scouting staff, but you've also got the computer boys working consulting for that group, right? Innovative approach, old school hockey guys. it takes years of investment to build something truly worthwhile, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an investment that the Canucks have regularly shown us across the last decade that they're not willing to make, or when they are, accidentally, not really willing to steer into with any level of discipline or foresight.
And Joe and Smithers text in, what about making the playoffs to gain more experience for next season? Again, I do think there are legitimate hockey reasons why making the playoffs matters.
100%.
I'm not sitting here saying, like, they should be working against the goal.
No.
But to me, there's a difference between being a seller and waving the white flag.
I even think if you sell, you can buy responsibly.
Yeah, like I'm not saying, oh, shut down Hughes so you miss the playoffs, juice your draft lottery odds. That's not what I'm saying at all.
It's also too late, and this draft class isn't one that matters enough to get, you know, like the Tocchet season, the season they fired Bruce Boudreau and hired Tocchet, right? And look, last year the team cited that stretch of games as like a major reason why they were able to get off. The truth is that if you leave Boudreau to sort of sit in the mess that team had made and the team doesn't rebound, even if you don't win the Bedard lottery, which the way the lottery balls fell, you wouldn't have, you might have met Matvei Michkov in the next uniform right now. Like, there are moments where you need to seize the opportunity and sag to the bottom of the standings. And no matter how well last year went, I still believe that they should have in that case. This one's not one where... No white flags need to be waved. You should be trying to make the playoffs. You're good enough to do it. And you're good enough, by the way, or should be, to subtract net assets, manage your risks, risk on pending UFAs, buy to re-strengthen your roster and still make the playoffs.
It's always just a question of priority, right? And how far to either pole you go on the priority. And that's what we're debating here. Anyways, trade deadline coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway for diehard pizza people. Order online at AJ's.pizza. We'll take a break. Landon Ferraro joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Little bit of a schedule change here on the show. We're going to talk with Landon at 1:30 now, and the Canucks have wrapped up practice at Rogers Arena. And we're going to hear from Elias Pettersson. Elias Pettersson spoke at some length, especially, you know, relative to what he's typically done this year with the media after practice for about 5 minutes. And we understand there's some pretty interesting thoughts from Elias Pettersson in this. We haven't had a chance to listen yet. We're just getting the updates from the people on the ground at practice.
Described to me by an anonymous member of the Vancouver media as an interview in which Pettersson owned everything.
All right. So there's the lead in, and let's hear from Canucks forward Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, I feel good. It's had a good practice today. Excited for tomorrow.
What was the focus in today's practice? It was pretty long.
Yeah, just some details we talked about defensively. A little better box out in small scenarios in a D zone that could hopefully we'll get the puck quicker and play offense.
I know you guys will want to focus game to game, but you've got a bunch of home games here in the next couple of weeks. How important is it for you guys to make the most of the time at home and the time in front of your fans?
Yeah, definitely. It's
back at home for the next.
Yeah, it's good to be home playing in front of our fans. We got 22 games left. We got a good chance to make the playoffs, make a push here, and start tomorrow.
3 games in a row, PD, 3 leads, 3 games you couldn't hold the lead. You know, when you look back at it, you guys figured out the answer there was?
We're working on it. I mean, we're trying to build a good team and always get better every day, and obviously we're not happy with that. I think definitely could have more wins this road trip. We're trying to see what we can do better and hopefully do better next year.
Elias, how much has it eaten away you the fact that your game isn't what we saw a couple of years ago? You know how good you can be. We know how good you can be. Mm-hmm. It hasn't happened yet. How much does that play in your mind at all?
Well, I think about it a lot, and I mean, I'll just be honest. I haven't been the way I want to be this year. I haven't played to the expectation I have on myself, the franchise I have on myself or have on me. So I'll be the first one to tell you. But that's in the past. I just want to take these last 22 games plus more, hopefully, and play my best hockey. I wish I could. We had more wins. I wish I had played a lot better, but I can't dwell on that anymore. And just trying to look ahead, and that's tomorrow games.
Is the pressure pretty crushing, or is it one of those things where it motivates you to play even harder?
No, I mean, I think pressure's good. It means you care. And if I wouldn't care, I wouldn't think too much about it. But it's I'm just owning up to it. I just want to. Turning around more than anyone, and good practice today, and I'm ready for tomorrow.
When you talk about
Canuck fans have stuck by you, you know, mm-hmm. they've always been behind you. What's the message to the fans out there? Where you're at?
No, I mean, I appreciate the love all the time. Maybe I'm not the best showing it all the time, and I mean, I think it was, I mean, after my comments against the Utah game, I missed a breakaway, and I got asked about it and how frustrating the season's been. I was really, really mad at that moment. I said something I didn't mean, and I said meaning is annoying, which is some days can be, but it's the last thing that's making me play bad or not myself this year. I just wanted to make that clear.
You talk about your desire.
We're okay to deal with that?
What? I got no other choice.
You talk about wanting to turn things around. Is the key to that just working your way out of it and focusing
absolutely.
On simplifying
yeah,
your game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's multiple things we can do. But it's just trying to win every day and help your teammates and work with coaches. And I'm not perfect. I wish I was perfect. So I'm just trying to grow every day and be the better player.
Does it help to have some of the experience that the coaching staff does have? Like, you can talk to them about what they've been through during their careers?
Absolutely. I mean, our coaching staff is incredible. With Tockett, his career, Footer, Gonch, and just defensive mind Yogi has. So we got so many good coaches here, and he's trying to pick their brain, work out scenarios on the ice so we can do better, bounce off ideas, so definitely.
One thing that doesn't really seem to make a whole lot of sense is the lack of shots and reluctance to shoot. Do you agree right now that you're sort of in a place where you're hesitating more than we've seen?
Yeah, definitely. I mean that comes with, obviously, not getting looks, trying to make the perfect pass instead of maybe simplifying it. And I've always been a pass-first guy. But I also have a good shot, so I should use it more, yes, but it's definitely been, maybe just not trusting it, but hopefully that's not a headline, but I'll definitely look to shoot more moving forward.
That is Elias Pettersson speaking to the media after Canucks practice today, and a lot to dig into there, but number one bullet point for me is just, that's the lightest Elias Pettersson has sounded in a long, long time. Even talking about his issues, right? Acknowledging his issues, but still, and not sounding light in an immature, unprofessional way, but not sounding like he's carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders because of it.
It doesn't have to be as miserable as Canucks players have made it from the perspective of talking to fans, right? Because, sure, you're talking to me and you might hate me and that's fine. Lots of people do. But it's that we're going to play that on radio.
Yeah.
It's that, you say something dismissive to me or Ian McIntyre, we can just run it. You're handing us a weapon for no reason, you know? And by the way, none of us really want to do it, right? Like, you either explain and use the media to tell your story, or you act churlishly and invite the media to say what they think. And generally speaking, it's much easier to let the media tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. So, look, I'm a firm believer that championship habits for a hockey team include the way you communicate and represent yourself in your market. Like, I believe that now, granted, I'm biased because that used to be my role. But, like, you think the media attention, the moment you most want to be focused and on your game, the biggest game of your life, you don't want to be thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go into the rink on the day of Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final and feel like the tension is something you're not used to, that it can be cut with a knife. Like, you want to be used to it. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the best winners in hockey also tend to be the best guys at dealing with it, right? That tend to be, in some ways, the most emotionally mature in terms of how they handle these moments. And so, look, that sounded to me like vintage Pettersson. Right? That sounded to me like the Pettersson that I used to talk to pre-pandemic. And that's welcome. Now I want to see that player on the ice.
Nick in the Ridge texts in, I just got back to my car, caught that interview midway. Wow, I literally cannot believe he sounded like that. Almost didn't even recognize him. A lot of people texting in. Petey showing a lot of humility. This one, Owen and Burnaby. Oh my God, he even cracked a few jokes. And that stood out to me as well, right?
Yeah.
And he, in the course of owning his comments to Ian McIntyre after the Utah game, right, explained it very forthrightly. I missed a breakaway in that game. I was really mad about it in the moment. I said something I didn't mean. Then he goes, yeah, media can be annoying some days. And guess what? Everyone laughs because it's like, yeah, of course it can.
We know.
Of course it can.
Well, and
no one's saying you have to lie and say you've never been frustrated by the media,
no,
and right? But it's, if you do it this way, everyone gets it. Everyone's on board. It's like, okay, yeah, you're explaining. You're letting us in.
And how low is the bar? Like, the bar is pretty low, okay? The bar is pretty low for these players to be, like, borderline baseline professional in terms of how they handle public commentary.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, and that's why the whole, like, I love seeing them own the media or whatever. It's like, guys, it's about the crest. It's about showing a little bit of humility, a little bit of respect for the market that you play in. Letting fans that want to have a sense of who you are and what you're dealing with in just a crack. That's the business we're in. And that's the business they're in, right? Fundamentally, the entertainment business. And, man, I think a little bit of that goes an awfully long way in changing the narrative around a player like Pettersson, who has been under fire across the last 10 days.
Keith, the water guy, says, you're all getting duped again. Colin from the Caribou says, he's saying the right things and sounds sincere, but I need to see the on-ice work ethic improve greatly before I start believing in this player again. Show me. Of course.
Yes.
Of course. You absolutely need to see it followed up with different practice habits, as the team would tell you, but also, of course, just a different mentality on the ice. And Pettersson addressed that, even the unwillingness to shoot, right? He says, yeah, maybe I'm not trusting it. Doesn't want that to be the headline, but he acknowledges, yeah, I'm a pass first guy typically, but I have a great shot. I should be using it more. I'm going to be looking to use my shot more. So even some of the specific details of his game addressing there, and to the point of, you know, you need to see it on the ice. You need to see that work ethic. We'll see if we get the actual audio from Rick Tocchet here before this segment is up. But I'm seeing quotes out there from him saying, you know, and this one is from Tocchet on Pettersson. The last 72 hours, he's doing stuff like, wow, that's the stuff we like to see from him. So at least from Rick Tocchet today, saying maybe he is seeing a little bit more of the on ice preparation, work habits stuff that he wants to see from Elias Pettersson. And the people are like, man, we're reacting a lot to this. You know, the interview means nothing, etc. It could absolutely mean nothing. It could absolutely be something that we've completely forgotten a week from now, and there's more, you know, tough performances. But the longer this has gone on, you're just looking for any glimmer of hope, any reason to believe that things are going to be different going forward, right? And at least this was different. This was different. Not different in the way that ultimately counts, which is different in his performance on the ice, but it was a very, very different Elias Pettersson than we've heard in a long time. So, yeah, you should be at best cautiously optimistic, to say the least. You need to see so much more where it actually matters. But I also get fans hearing that and just thinking, well, that's different. And different is what Elias Pettersson has needed for an awfully long time right now.
Yeah. Yes. And so, yeah, I mean, look. Good. Just good.
Yeah.
I think that needed to happen. I think he needed a moment like that to change the conversation around him just a little bit. And I thought that was well done. I think it's a reminder of a lot of different things that should matter a little bit more to us when we discuss players, when we discuss teams, when we discuss sort of the relationship between fans and players and media. Just like a little bit of baseline honesty goes an awfully long way. And that's, I think, what that sort of showed.
Yeah.
Good to see him own it. Let's move forward. Hopefully his play on the ice gets back to looking more like it used to, just like he sounded an awful lot more like he used to.
Yes.
In that interview.
And we'll, again, we'll see. We'll keep an eye out here for some actual clips from Rick Tocchet, but did want to pass along that one that I mentioned that, as he said, you know, maybe starting to see a different Elias Pettersson on the ice at practice in the time since they played their last game. And the big question will come now when they hit the ice and for the remainder of the season. As Pettersson himself said, 22 games left here, not trying to dwell on the past, just wants to go out and play his best hockey. And man, would things look a whole lot differently for the Vancouver Canucks if he does go out and play his best hockey tomorrow. Ed texts in, Jamie, after the Ducks game tomorrow. Okay, I'm done with PD again. It absolutely can happen, Ed. It absolutely can happen. I'm not going to put that one, to say that that's off the board, because it's been a roller coaster. It's been a roller coaster with Elias Pettersson so far this year.
You got to be able to beat the Ducks, man.
Well, sure, but they can beat the Ducks with Elias Pettersson being a ghost.
Yeah.
So that's not the question.
I don't know.
Well, I guess it depends on Hughes' status.
Yeah. No, I mean, Ducks are so much faster than them. It's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, the Ducks just outskated them all night long when they played in Anaheim last week. It was shocking.
This one, methinks seeing JT Miller light it up has lit up Petey.
Well, good. You mentioned
that.
It should.
You mentioned that in the first segment.
How could it not? How could it not? Can you imagine? Can you imagine if they like traded you to the morning show and then the morning show?
I think about it every day.
And then the morning show got like record ratings. Everyone's like, man, that show has been. Meanwhile, everyone's like, wow, Tom, like he's slurring every second word. Like I audibly heard him fart during his show the other day. Like it's that bad. Do you know how desperate I'd be to catch up?
It's wild that you can perceive my like innermost desires like that.
But I'm telling you right now, that would fuel me.
Yeah, of course it would.
Yeah.
Of course it would.
I'd wanna show you how good I could be.
Yes.
How could it not? Like, how could it not? Honestly. Guy has more points than you have shots on goal.
That's wild.
How could that not be killing you?
Yeah.
If it wasn't killing him, we'd have a way bigger problem. He should be furious. If he's not furious, that's a way bigger problem than if he is.
Yeah, and the one thing I've never bought in this whole thing is that he's checked out or doesn't care.
No.
I've never bought that. I've never got that sense. It's like, well, he signed the big deal, and now he's just coasting on that. Like, it just doesn't have that feel to me. It has a feel much more of a guy caring way too much in some ways than a guy not caring at all. And I think you heard a little bit of that from Pettersson in that one. As well, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can get your thoughts in as well. I did want to go back into this one. And again, Landon Ferraro is going to join us at 1:30 here. We'll see if we get any Rick Tocchet audio in the next few minutes that we can play at least a chunk of before we chat with Landon. But in the meantime, we'll go back in to the inbox. This one came in earlier in the show when we were talking about JT Miller and really him refinding his game with the New York Rangers. Amrit texts in, JT Miller performing like his old self is another example of why Tocchet should not be back here next year. Once he got out of Tocchet's system, he started putting up points again.
I'm telling you right now, the New York Rangers would be 10 points better with Rick Tocchet instead of Peter Laviolette.
JT Miller.
I'm telling you right now.
JT Miller set his career high in points under Rick Tocchet In right. what world was Rick Tocchet not getting the best out of JT Miller? He scored 102 points playing for Rick Tocchet and was a monster in the playoffs.
Have you seen what happened to Capo Caco?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, do you watch the Rangers play disorganized defensive hockey, right? Like, they give up chances off the rush. They get beat like the Bruce Boudreau Canucks used to. Mm-hmm. They are desperately unstructured. Like, they went from Gallant to Laviolette, and what they've needed the whole time is a guy more in the mold of a Tocchet or a Travis Green. Like, that's what they've needed. And ideally, someone new age enough to actually, like, empower and play their young guys, right? So that guys like Philip Hedl and Capo Caco, you know, don't immediately look better elsewhere. Like, honestly, the Rangers are the example of the team where young players get dealt to other clubs and it's immediately like, whoa, Philip Hedl. Whoa, Capo Caco.
Mm.
This summer. Whoa, Alexis Lafreniere. Like, that's the team that's getting the least out of guys. Braden Schneider hasn't improved in like 3 years. Keandre Miller going backwards. Like, what are we talking about? That's the exact wrong team to use for this.
It's just so bizarre to me to try to use JT Miller as the example of the guy like really struggling to perform under Rick Tocchet, the guy who hit his absolute peak.
Yeah.
Got every possible thing he could out of him as a player was JT Miller under Rick Tocchet.
You know what that is? That's a non-puck knower's take. I'm sorry.
Wow.
You don't know puck.
I did. There was a good piece, finally, a really great piece up in The Athletic by your colleague, Aaron Tile, today, kind of diving in to the, I don't know why I'm riffing into you today, but diving
it's noted and not appreciated.
Diving into the Canucks' offensive woes, and part of it was, you know, dealing with the Rick Tocchet criticisms. And I think, you know, Harmon very fairly saying, look, of course there are things Rick Tocchet could do differently to try to juice the offense a little bit for the Canucks. But I found it really fascinating, him comparing the players on the team and their typical points per game average in their career and their points per game average under Rick Tocchet. Not a lot of massive decreases, even Elias Pettersson, who's struggled for, what, 13 months now under Rick Tocchet to produce? You forget. I think people forget. He also was incredibly productive for 80 games under Rick Tocchet before the decline really ticked in. So even Pettersson, like, slightly more productive on a point per game basis under Rick Tocchet than he has been for the rest of his career. So,
including Bruce Boudreau?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because again, like, the final, what, 30 games of that season where he hit 100 points was under Rick Tocchet.
I'll tell you what, that Seattle game, like, one thing that kind of annoys me when we see one of those performances like we saw in Seattle, and honestly, like we saw in Vegas, I'd say too, especially in the early part of the game in Vegas, like, I firmly believe this. I think this team has been a mid-effort team over the course of the year. And I don't know that that's like a lack of work rate or just a lack of mentality or a lack of spirit amongst the group. But we saw what this team looked like as a max effort group under Tocchet last year. I don't think we've seen that enough this season.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it like 10 to 15 times. And every time I see it, it sort of makes me madder about all the times that I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Because I fundamentally believe that the reason that this team generates so little, as much as this team has in fact adjusted how they want to play and turn the dials toward low event hockey, like, as much as that's part of it, I think the fundamental is that this team hasn't worked hard enough to generate scoring chances. Like, I don't think they maintain a high enough group mentality from a work rate perspective, game in, game out, to generate more than what they're generating. And for me, that's like galling. Like, I really find it deeply annoying.
Yeah,
in sort of trying to sugarcoat my thoughts about this team for the consumption of Canucks fans.
Now, to me, if you want to level criticisms at Rick Tocchet, like, the idea that he is anti-offense or that he's, like, choked the creativity out of his players or no one could possibly produce in his system, like, those are all dead ends to me. If you want to say...
Well, he was just in an offensive role for Team Canada.
But if you want to say he hasn't gotten the best out of his team consistently this year, well, that's true.
That's true.
And that's his job. Now, that doesn't mean, like, and therefore they should fire him and therefore they should move on. But at least that's, like, you're right. That's a coach's job and it hasn't happened this year. At least that is, like, valid grounds for criticism.
We're definitely not, like, I'm definitely not blaming him for that, but I think that's fair. I think the power play thing is fair,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, this team hasn't been better on the power play since firing Jason King. Right. And Minnesota's been pretty good with him. So, you know, I think the personnel issue, is fair in terms of the composition of the coaching staff. I think, you know, assuming Rick Tocchet is back next year, I think we'll all be talking a lot about who the power play coach is. I think they need to bring in an experienced hand in that particular area. So that I think is fair. And then, you know, I think there have been moments where, like, if I was to have one really substantive criticism of Rick Tocchet, I think there have been moments where he's a little slow to react to players who are getting results, but it's mostly good fortune. You know what I mean? Like, guys like Max, like, we didn't need to see 25 games of Max's son. I'm sorry. But he had, like, a 40% on-ice shooting clip for a couple weeks, so he stuck around in the lineup for a little bit too long. I think there have been some moments where guys have been elevated, and really it's just been, like, cluster luck as opposed to actual individual contributions. So that would be the other thing that I would sort of levy as, like, an area where he could improve a little. Just being a little more mindful of regression.
That's fair. And again, like, I don't know.
Pretty rare that you have a coach that's not fooled by stuff like that, by the way.
Is he getting enough effort out of his players, or what can he do? If it's such a hard question to answer, right? Because we're not behind the scenes. We don't know all the buttons he's pushed. It certainly seems like he's tried a lot.
When you've got it all last year, though.
Yeah.
And when the team immediately on hiring you became stingy defensively and began to control play at a far better rate, 5-on-5. Like, to me, that's the biggest data point, right? Because you'll remember, like, I was buying the Rick Tocchet bump really early in a way that I never bought the Bruce Boudreaux bump, because Tocchet actually made a difference in terms of the structure and control that this team was able to exert 5-on-5. Like, that to me is the number one thing you're looking for from a bench boss. Tocchet clears that bar easily. That's ultimately what matters most to me.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Landon Ferraro joins us next to wrap up the show here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you, or online at dunbarlumber.com. Final segment of the show here. Landon Ferraro is going to join us momentarily here. And in fact, we have him on the line right now. Former NHL player, now an analyst here on 650 and on Sportsnet TV. It's Landon Ferraro. What's going on, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just, kind of getting into things. And then that comes out with Pedersen and all those comments. So perfect. Just kind of catching up with you guys.
I mean, for me anyway, having dealt with him all season, and it's been pulling teeth with him, with a lot of Canucks players, it hasn't been a lot of fun, I don't think, around the rink this season, but that felt like just a breath of fresh air, like a player who sort of hopefully can have lifted a weight off themselves by just sort of being a human being in public for a few minutes. What was your reaction to his commentary?
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, from the very first word that came out of his mouth, like, you could hear a difference in just how he was communicating and just how he was talking about everything and being so open compared to, you know, like you said, like what he's been putting out, you know, for the last year here. And to me, it just sounded like someone that, you know, kind of finally accepted where they're at right now. And there's no more, like, you know, internal lying to himself, or anything like that. Like, when you're, you know, I've never been in the position that he is of, you know, being in that massive contract and you're an incredibly skilled player. And then all of a sudden, like, you're just not anything that you have shown in the past. And, like, from my experience, when you go on like a big drought, like, a big part of it that extends it is inside your head telling yourself that you're doing okay. You're just getting unlucky. or, you know, if that bounce would have just gone in, you know, and now I'm out of it and I can get rolling again. And when you finally kind of just have that moment where you're like, you know what, like, this is on me, I haven't been putting the extra work in, or whatever that missing piece was, now you can actually go and attack it. Like, you're not lying to yourself or anyone else anymore. You're lighter. You can just go play, start putting that work in again, and hopefully, you know, things start to come. And just listening to him, that's what it sounded like. It just sounded like a guy that wants to move forward and wants to do well.
Yeah, and that question about, you know, because we played the audio and we got a ton of text in saying, like, wow, this is so great to hear. Sounds like a different person. And then you also get text saying, like, okay, hey, it's great. He's giving a different interview to the media, but we need to see the results on the ice. From your perspective, though, you see a connection that, okay, that can be, if he's talking like that and he's different like that, you hope that it can translate into, you know, one, different practice habits, the way he's preparing, but also just playing differently in the games. Like, you think there should be at least some reason for optimism there?
I think so. I mean, again, like, you can't fix the issue or the problem until you, like, you yourself, like, talking Pettersson, you know, sees it and sees that not only just his on ice, but, you know, even just the fact that he went back and, you know, said sorry about the comment about the media after the Utah game, and makes a little joke out of it as well, and got the scrum laughing. Like, when has that happened this year? You know, like, yeah. It just seems like he's finally, it's not about anything else other than him at this point, like, internally. And I think that's a good thing. Like, I don't expect him to come out tomorrow night and instantly be who he was, you know, a year ago. But at the same time, like, I think there is going to be a correlation there. I think this is something that he can build off of. And not only that, but everyone else in that dressing room either heard it while he was saying it or will listen to it later. Like, that's a big piece for those guys too. I'm not in that room, but just seeing him kind of own up to all of it to everyone else, maybe he's already done it inside. We don't know, but, like, that's a big piece for them too.
Yeah, no doubt. And the one kind of specific thing he talked about too was the issue of not shooting enough. And he even said, you know, maybe he's not trusting his shot right now. When you hear a player say they're not trusting their shot, what does that mean in practice to you? How do you go about rebuilding the trust in your shot?
Well, the funny part for that, like, to me, when I was in droughts, I felt like I was really good at scoring in practice. And then I'd get to the game and I'd have that same exact shot, and I just couldn't hit my spot. And a lot of it is just, you know, overthinking and caring so much about that shot because you know that you've been in a drought and all of this. So, I mean, again, like, I just think for him, it's important to, you know, be realistic with himself and know and try and figure out, like, why, or, you know, what is the issue with shooting? Like, why don't you want to release that? We've seen what your one-timer is. We've seen what your snapshot can be. Like, it's there. He knows it is too. But now it's just, like, kind of telling yourself it's okay if it's a bad shot. It doesn't have to be perfect. And as you start throwing more and more, because he's going to have the puck on his tape and in good areas, as you start just shooting, it just, one's going to go in and then the next one will. And then before you know it, you're like, yeah, I do have a pretty good shot. You know, but it's just a repetition and something where you almost have to say, like, it doesn't matter what this shot turns out to be. Like, I just need to shoot it.
Landon, I'm curious to get your thoughts just, like, on this road trip that we just watched and how that connects with sort of the dynamic of Canucks hockey operations considering their options ahead of the trade deadline. You have a trip like that, it's devastating from the perspective of your playoff probability. And yet, you know, in some ways, I think it's fair to look at that trip and say the Canucks were actually probably better than 1-4. Maybe not a lot better, but they were probably like 2-3 or 2-1 in terms of their true form, despite the run of negative results there. How important is it to be sort of honest and reflective and non-emotional in making decisions and charting a path forward for Canucks hockey ops this week?
I think it's the most important thing. Like, at this point, like, you have to make sure whatever you're bringing in or, you know, if you're going to be moving things out, whatever it may be, like, you have to be thinking about the future. And as much as, yeah, like, if you can improve the team right now and that's, and you can kind of get it moving, that's great. But at the same time, you know, like, you have to have that conversation within your group of, do we truly think if we can, you know, bring in another player, can we compete for a Stanley Cup? And if that answer is yes, they're going to go one way or another. I don't know how you can look at it, you know, in that sense, but, you know, you go through that and then you move to the next thing of how can we get better in the future? Like, we need to make sure that next season our center depth has more speed. We have to make sure that guys are playing to their ability. Like, we need our wingers, especially further down the lineup, to be scoring a bit like they have when Suter and Sherwood. Like, they need their pieces to work, but I think it's more important to look about, you know, making sure that, you know, see, can you bring in a piece or two for next year that has some term on it?
So I'm really high on Utah, but I think there's no world in which, just on a talent basis, the Canucks aren't the ninth best team in the West at absolute worst, right? With a puncher's chance of finishing ahead of the eighth, given, you know, the fact that they've got a game in hand and a couple points in the bank. Over a Utah team that I think is narrowly better, but whatever. It's not a significant gap between them. We've been talking, though, on this program a lot today about this notion of the Canucks as a spent force, of the idea that, you know, with the Demko uncertainty, with the instable play or unstable play of Artur Shelovs, with the fact that Kevin Lankinen looks like he might be wearing down a little bit and is about to set his career high in games, you don't necessarily look at Canucks goaltending as the strength that it's been to this point in the season down the stretch. Pettersson, we don't really know what we're going to get. And then Quinn Hughes, obviously another ailment here that he's working through, missed another practice. What do you get from him? And between those sort of three engines of this team misfiring, or at least not firing at a level that we trust to be, you know, full octane or high octane here down the stretch, is there a chance in your view that the Canucks underperform their talent level down the stretch run here?
That they underperform, yeah, that, as a talent group down the stretch?
What are you thinking about the spent force theory in terms of this team maybe not being able to, or not a good bet to play up to their capability over the remainder of the regular season?
I mean, I think it's a decent chance. Like, again, we've talked about it so much. I mean, it's been an entire season here of, like, one thing after another, whether it be injury or outside, or, you know, Pettersson not playing up to his point, Demko out, like, all of these things. When a team has a good year, there's, like, one or two things that they have to, like, adversity-wise, they got to really push through, whether it be a bigger injury or, you know, something external happens that you got to be able to push through. Like, at this point, like, it's kind of hard to even picture a way for those guys in the dressing room to be at their best all the way down when you have all these things still happening. Like, you know, Quinn leaves last game and, like you said, it was out of practice today, and watching him move in that last little bit, like, it looked like he was, you know, really quite hindered, right? Like, his, yeah, watching Quinn skate is one of the best parts of watching the Canucks.
Yeah.
And towards the end of that game, it might have been his last shift, when he chases the guy down back to his own blue line and he stops up and Quinn takes all the way down to the faceoff dot to stop up. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot going on there that I just don't see how this team can push all the way through. Like, there's points where it looks good, but it's hard to ask to play, you know, as close to a full 60 in, you know, the majority of the games when, you know, like, the lineup just hasn't fit properly, and then guys are just constantly in and out. Like, it's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, and it sounds like per Rick Tocchet that Quinn Hughes is going to be a game time decision tomorrow as well, so kind of more uncertainty. You know, could they do 11-7 again, and that plays into that fit stuff as well. You mentioned the lack of speed down the middle. I think that's something that's caught a lot of eyes on that road trip. We've talked about it on this show. You know, I saw quotes today from Jake DeBrusk acknowledging it as well. Specifically at the center position, what does a lack of speed do to a team? How do they have to compensate when you don't have it, again, specifically down the middle of the ice?
Well, the reason down the middle of the ice speed is so important, because if you're carrying all that pace up you can still go left and right, whether you're making a move or dishing it out. If I'm skating down the right wing and I'm a really fast guy going up there, well, it makes it a lot easier. Now everyone, like the 2D slide over, you have the back checkers coming back. Like before you know it, you're skating into an absolute wedge. But if that pocket or if that player is coming from the middle, all of a sudden you can't just, you know, the D can't come diving up at you to, you know, make an open ice hit. I mean, he can, but he's not going to unless you have your head down. But if it's down the wall, like they can lunge at you. And if they miss, they still have backup behind them. But if they miss in the middle, it's a breakaway. So right away, like it amplifies everything on the defensive side of the puck. Like you're forcing them to have to make, you know, sticks in lanes, making sure pucks aren't going side to side. As the speed pushes in and pushes those defense back, that's where players now on the outside, as you kick it out, like those wingers can cut behind, and now they're gaining the center of the ice, and hopefully that middle driver's pushing those guys down to at least the hash marks. Now they're shooting from a good situation, right? Like everything comes from speed and from the middle. You get locked out on the outside. It's so hard to get the puck back in.
Landon, I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball here, so fair warning. But it's about the Anaheim Ducks, so it's not that far off the board. But I'm just curious to get your thoughts on this. I've been watching this Ducks team play all year. Jamie will attest, I've had Anaheim Ducks stock for years and years and years. That's been frustrated repeatedly. And watching them early in the season, I was really annoyed by the stylistic choices to play like lockdown conservative hockey, especially because the way that the Ducks played, they also were still surrendering a lot, even if Lucas Dostal and company were hiding just how permissive they were defensively. And I just wanted to see their young players given the reins to like figure out how to make a difference in the NHL, to figure out how to succeed in the NHL. And I'm sort of seeing this fascinating, to me anyway, this fascinating, like incongruent approach that you've got Columbus, right? Where they're just going. Like, they're just going, they're trying to throw a fastball off the rush and just skate you off the ice night in, night out. And sometimes it's going to work. Like, when that team's on, they can skate you right off the sheet. But when it doesn't, they might lose a you know, one of those one-goal games where you look at it and think, hey, that team lost because they were inexperienced. The Ducks are never going to lose because they look inexperienced. They're just going to lose, like, 3-1 because they had 15 shots and Dostal made 40 saves to keep it somewhat close. And yet, for all of that, for all of my criticism of Greg Cronin and how the Ducks have played, you know, you watch them now and their speed's kind of working. And maybe down the stretch, this sort of negative approach that they've had through the season, maybe it pays off and has them ready for this stretch run. I just can't shake the idea that with all of their young players having had a poor season, right? I sort of wonder if you're one of those teams that it's been bad for a few years and has accumulated a ton of talent, like, do you need to let them go? Do you need to let them just succeed and feel good about their games and then later on tamp it down and sort of do the let's get serious and figure out how to win thing that like the Capitals and the Tampa Bay Lightning went through over the course of the past decade? Or does it make sense to try and teach these young guys how to win, even if it comes at the expense of their confidence early in the year?
To me, I'm a big fan of, like, you know, if we're talking the Ducks with that young group, like, let them play. Let them find their offense at the NHL level, because it is, like, it's the best league in the world. It is really hard to produce at this level and not just have little flashes of it, but be, you know, learn how to be a consistent scorer. You know, I do like that, but you have to be careful because you don't want to end up to where you end up being a bit of Buffalo and you are constantly chasing this. And then you've let guys, I'll say, over ripen there while not turning a corner, and then you ship them out because now it doesn't work. You know, thinking of Reinhardt and Eichel and guys like that. But like, if you let them run for a little bit, like through the first, you know, literally up until this point, and then start to clamp it down a bit. But I don't think it's a clamp in the sense of, like, you know, you're just being hard all the time and pointing out all the turnovers and everything like that. Like, you want them to keep making their plays, but it turns, instead of the video session being, you know, you talking to the player and him just listening, like having a discussion about okay, what were you thinking when you made this play? You know, that's a, you know, it was a bit of a high risk. If you would have just kind of gone this direction with it, now you can kind of get the same thing done, but it's a safer way to do it. Like, just teaching them while they're going, I think, is for younger players the best way to go about it.
And Landon, speaking of young players with offensive upside, Jonathan Lekker-Mackey gets recalled to the Canucks today. He was skating at practice with Philip Hedel and Drew O'Connor. So pretty interesting chance for Lekker-Mackey there, given, you know, how much speed Philip Hedel has brought, and especially relative to the rest of the team down the middle. What do you think of that potential line, and what does Lekker-Mackey need to do in this latest stint in the NHL for him?
Well, first off, I really like the line. I think the way that O'Connor can skate, and he's, you know, he's physical and he can get in on the forecheck and kind of move around a bit. And then you add in Hedel and some playmaking and speed through the middle, and can, again, open up some space exactly like I was just talking about. Like, if he's driving through and now you have Lekker-Mackey stepping off his wing into the middle with, you know, unleashing that great snapshot, that's a good line. Like, that sounds good already to me. So, you know, it's those two players doing their thing. They need to bring their speed and they need to open up space. And then for Lekker-Mackey, I think for him to, you know, to have a good successful game tomorrow, it's just every time the puck gets near your tape in the offensive zone, use your shot. Use it every time you can, because it's your golden ticket. And, you know, every time we've seen him unleash it, it's a really good one. But, you know, I think these are two players that can really kind of help him get to that shot.
Landon, always appreciate the time, man. Thank you for doing this. We'll chat again soon.
Yeah, have a good one.
That is Landon Ferraro, who was at Canucks practice today, weighing in on Lekker-Mackey coming up there playing with Philip Hedel, but also, you know, more pressingly for a lot of people, the Elias Pettersson, the now legendary already Elias Pettersson media session. But as Landon said, and I like the way he put it there, right? Like, step one, and this isn't just with Elias Pettersson, but this is, you can apply this to a lot of different walks in life. If you got a problem, you have to be honest about what the problem is. You cannot solve a problem unless you are correctly identifying what the problem is, unless you're being honest with yourself. And we don't know, we haven't known what that process has looked like with Elias Pettersson, but as Landon said, now he's being honest about it. He's being honest about it openly. He's being honest about it, or at least to a degree. He's being upfront publicly. It's not completely unreasonable to think that there could be a connection between taking that step publicly and doing the on-ice things that he needs to do to turn his game around. Now, as Landon said, it doesn't mean you should expect him to go out against Anaheim and all of a sudden look like vintage Elias Pettersson. You would still expect there to be a process. Who knows about the physical stuff? All of that. No one's saying, okay, all of a sudden the switch has been flipped and the old Elias Pettersson is back. But could it be a starting point? And in the words of Landon, like, hey, if you're not lying to yourself anymore, maybe you can actually start moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe he had to hit rock bottom.
Yep.
Like, maybe he had to acknowledge that there was an issue, not just in, you know, oh, like, this has been unfair, the media has been so unfair to me. You know what I mean? Like, the team environment hasn't been good. We're not playing creative offensively. I mean, maybe he just had to hit rock bottom, struggle at the Four Nations, right?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. If you're looking for like light bulb moments, right?
You get benched at the Four Nations, playing for your country.
Go to a completely different environment where, you know, with friends on the team, your old coach, like guys who are really excited, talking you up. They're hyping what you can do at that tournament for Sweden. And then, as you said, you're wearing your country's jersey, you get benched. That's tough. Yeah, that's really tough.
And everyone talking about how supportive they are of you to start the tournament.
Yeah.
And you know, there's been like a pretty clear that he wore out his welcome as an option for that team. That's tough. Then you struggle the way he did those last five games, which was more than he struggled even over the course of the past 12 months when he hasn't been especially good. Like, that was different, of a different magnitude. Look, at the end of the day, I've always held a lot of Elias Pettersson stock, and my priors, I'm very strong on my priors. He's been poor enough in terms of how he's both carried himself, right, and performed, that even my confidence has been tested. But, like, Pettersson wouldn't be the first 26-year-old to figure out and hit a new level maturity-wise as a result of, you know, growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And
as a result specifically of adversity, right? Of being forced to by circumstances around you.
Totally. I mean, I was a moron in my early 20s too. So what?
No, no, you lobbed that meatball across the plate, but it's late enough in the show that I'm not going to take a cut at it. I'm going to graciously let it go by.
And then I grew up and stopped being an idiot. No, so look, I'm at the end of the day, I'm still holding. I'm still going to hold. And I hope that this is the start of, you know, a more open, a more fun-loving, a looser Pettersson. And hopefully that translates to him having some fun at the rink, having some fun on the ice. Because when he's having fun and he's performing well, I still believe he's one of the 10, at least, one of the 10 purest offensive talents in this sport.
We will see if it can translate on the ice starting tomorrow when they take on the Anaheim Ducks. Of course, it's a crossover Wednesday and a Buchla Wednesday on the show tomorrow. Plus, we'll look ahead to the Anaheim Ducks game. And of course, we'll do more trade deadline coverage, which on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. For diehard pizza people, order online at AJ's.pizza. We're back tomorrow with more Canucks talk on Sportsnet 650.